Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is AB Dawji and this is The Big Picture. The Big Picture, broadcasting live on Radio Islam from Durban and Radio Al Ansar. Yes, all coming to you from Durban, the best city in South Africa. Lekker warm weather, eh? Hey, fabulous beaches, great chow places. And you know what? That just reminds me of something with shock and horror, shock and awe. It doesn't look like I will be escaping to some overseas destination on one of my tours in December this year. By escaping, I mean the hordes from the hordes of Gautengers who will be pouring in here, taking up all the parking spaces on the beachfront, filling all the restaurants. And they all come here with their half a dozen short, fat kids, all tomato red from the hot weather. And they are constantly hungry. Constantly hungry, eh? Dairy! Dairy, take us to the wumpy dairy. What the hell is dairy? We here in Durban speak perfect English and all. Daddy, will you be kind enough to take us to any eatery of your choice, entirely at your convenience? Anyway, I'll be stuck here in December unless the virus miraculously disappears and we can all fly out again, inshallah. So, ladies, how's the situation at home, eh? Hey, is the bully behaving himself in his pajamas? Or have you got one of those rookers, eh? The chain-smoking cigarettes since Tuesday, making the curtains and everything stink, and making the whole house smell like a birdcage. Ladies, you have my full sympathy. Send him out, send him out. Tell him we're in lockdown too, so he must get some exercise. Send him to the gym. By the way, I don't know how the opening of the gym is going to work. Will people be huffing and puffing with the masks on? Or if the masks are off, then what? Hey, you know what? The virus really travels a great distance. Luckily, my gym, Virgin Active, is still grappling with this issue and still closed as far as I know. So, tell the bully to go out for a walk. Otherwise, he'll end up like an old, like a fat old bulldog. I really mean that very seriously, eh? Listen to this. Germany's dog owners will soon be ordered by law to walk their pets twice a day. The country's agriculture minister, Julia Klöckner, has said she is introducing the new law based on evidence that many of the nation's 9.4 million dogs are not getting the exercise or stimuli they need. Under the new regulations in the Hundeverordnung, whatever that means, or to put it simply, the Dogs Act, owners will not get away with a quick jog round the block, but will be required to take their dogs out for at least 1 hour on each occasion. Klöckner said the rules were based on new scientific findings that show dogs need, in her words, sufficient measure of activity and contact with the environment stimuli, including other people, nature and people. Other animals, nature, and people. The tethering of dogs on a chain or a lead for long periods also faces an all-out ban. Right, so dogs may not be left alone at home all day, and a person will be required to take care of their dog several times a day. So there you are, folks. I think that a law should be passed here to make it compulsory for the pajama motors to go out for a 5-kilometer walk. But here's the big question. In Germany, how will the police know whether a dog owner has complied with the law and took the dog for a walk? Will they ask the dog? Will they be asking the dog? Maybe one woof equals yes and two woofs equals no. What is it they say? It's a dog's life, right? Okay, here's another thing that had me quite amused. And for this story, we cross over to Tokyo in Japan. There's a very bustling area in the city center, bit upmarket, eh? And that area is called Shibuya. The city has got top architects to erect two new sets of toilets in two parks. Each set has three toilets all next to each other. So, what's the big deal about that, I hear you impatient lot asking? Well, let me ask you this. What are the two things that you worry about when you want to use a toilet, a public toilet? Think about it for a moment while I tell you this, that when you travel in the Middle East and want to use a public toilet, you first have to take your heart tablets and your anti-nausea pills before, because you are liable to faint when you see the condition of some of these toilets are in. Water all over the floor, tissues thrown all over the place. And I won't go further. I don't want to spoil your lunch, okay? But I'm sure you've experienced this. And you find dirty shoe prints on the toilet seat. People perch on them like they do on a low-pan toilet. They're not used to the high-pan toilet. Like a parrot on the swing in a bird cage, eh? So, that's the first thing you worry about, the cleanliness of the place. And secondly, you don't want to push the door open to find someone already busy in there. And some of the locks in these places don't work at all. Well, the architects in Tokyo took these two things into consideration, cleanliness and whether the place is occupied. How did they overcome this problem? Well, they built the toilets out of glass. Yes, all the walls are made out of glass, see-through glass I'm talking about here. See-through, normal glass. Seriously, you can see right inside. So, would you use such a toilet? They're quite fancy, actually. You can see the photos on CNN. Just Google it. Tokyo Transparent Toilets. Just Google that and you'll see they're very, very classy, very upmarket. And it's in a very busy area. I can picture the Balis pulling their kurtas up to their chest level and parking there. No, actually, there is an explanation. You can see from the outside whether the toilet is clean, number one, and whether anyone is inside, anyone occupying. Then, when you enter and put the lock on, when you engage the lock or the latch, the glass turns opaque, means that becomes all foggy, creamy, foggy. So you cannot see from the outside at all. You see, once you put the latch on or the lock, engage the lock, then the whole window, the whole glass becomes foggy, very foggy indeed. What a wonderful innovation, eh? Some of those who used these new toilets forgot to put the latch on, much to the amusement of the people outside. You may think I'm speaking sheer nonsense, but go check it out, okay? Okay, now to some serious stuff, serious stuff. It's a subject that's gone viral on social media, and it's a hot topic that I really didn't want to speak about. I got cold feet. And then I thought, hey, Dauji, you got a big mouth about everything else, and now you become a big bung brook about an issue that's widely discussed already. So I decided, okay, I'll stick my neck out and put my hand in the fire, just to mix metaphors. But before that, dear Bayo Beno or Buzruko, a brief preamble, an introduction. A few things that need to be clarified first. Let's look at the first one, which is about the manner, the way that people deliver lectures. Each speaker has his or her own particular style of speaking. For example, Suleiman Dengo, Mustafa Darsot, Aslam Mayat, who have done my, who do my program when I'm away. Each one of them has their own style of speaking in order to engage, to connect with the listeners. Some of these chaps are serious, some are a bit more relaxed, and of course my style of speaking is different. sometimes I get away with murder, especially the time that I did Satchmo, remember? Expected to collect some lucky verbal clubs. But you people are very generous out there, very forgiving. And so that's me, that's how I speak. I mixed it up a bit with some serious stuff and light banter and some bhajia colloquialisms and so on. Some may like my way of speaking and some may not. And that's perfectly fine. No problem, Habibi, Habibi. Right, now to the next point. Within the Muslim community, the subject of patriarchy, misogyny, and male chauvinism regularly rears its head. So what do these terms mean? Here's some explanation. Misogyny, dislike of, contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against women. What is a chauvinistic man? A male who patronizes, disparages, or otherwise denigrates females in the belief that they are inferior to males and thus deserving of less than equal treatment or benefit. Patriarchy is a social system in which men hold primary power and predominate in roles of political leadership, moral authority, social privilege, and control of property. So, I'm sure you've got that now. You understand what all those things mean. People hold very strong and divergent views about this issue. The Sharia is quoted, the Hadiths are quoted, they are referred to, and the role of women in the early days of Islam is often mentioned. These debates have been hot, and simmering for a very long time. One could describe it as a low-scale warfare. The issue of, for example, Muslim personal law, the Muslim Marriages Act and so on, Amina Wadood and many other contentious issues come to mind. Now, let me say this. I don't want to discuss these issues because very well-articulated, cogent, compelling arguments have been presented by both sides of the divide. And I'm no scholar to pass judgment on who is right or wrong and maybe I'm just too lazy to do any in-depth research. So let me repeat this. The debates have been hot and simmering for ages. And into this cauldron, this boiling cauldron of bubbling dissension, disagreement, and discontent, guess what happened? Maulana Dawood Samson. That's right. He fell right into this boiling hot pot. And the sky fell down on his head. I first heard about him, I saw him on a video where he was delivering a Jummah talk. And the video was on social media. To say that his style of delivery is unconventional is to understate it. He speaks like the ordinary man in the streets, street language. Of course, clean, but full of slang and bits of Afrikaans, but lots and lots of humor. Very funny guy. I remember in that first video I saw, he was discussing a serious subject about the additives that are put into processed food stuff that can have a negative effect on your body and also on your behavior. He said something about, I think it was breakfast cereal. And if I remember correctly, that it gives you a sudden sugar rush. And to demonstrate that, what happens to you when you have this stuff, he jumped on and off the member and then he flopped down to show what happens when the boost is gone. Flopped down. I thought that was very funny. A serious subject, of course, delivered with humor, made his speech entertaining and educational. He's a very funny guy, as I said. And in that style, he announced on a short video a few days ago that he is getting married again, meaning he's taking on a second wife. He tried to make the announcement humorous in his normal style by saying that there are many hens out there and therefore the rooster, well, we'll not use another word which some have interpreted differently. So, he said that there are many hens out there and therefore roosters should go out and get a hen. He tried to be his usual funny way of speaking, but the joke fell flat. Very, very flat. Almost flattened him when immediately a ton of bricks of criticism fell onto his head. Someone posted something that was quite reasonable on social media, that the Maulana crossed the line and he demeans women and so on. And I also responded by saying that there were hints of patriarchy in his marriage announcement. I said that at that point. And then the Maulana released another short video where he apologized profusely and unreservedly, for what he said. Shame, I thought he was going to burst out crying. I am sure he was bewildered by the claps that followed, that he was getting from all directions. Many ladies and some men also wrote lengthy posts on social media, very articulate, angrily denouncing this patriarchal chauvinist. A firestorm was unleashed. Some men even signed a letter saying that he should be severely sanctioned, perhaps even fired. Okay, so here is my take on it. Here's my opinion about this whole issue. There are many in our community who are angry with men, and that includes Maulanas, who they believe have a patriarchal attitude to women, misogyny and all of that. And that's true. There's no doubt about it. So they're very angry about this, and have been for a long time. Very angry indeed. Now this Bicharo Maulana has to take the collective hit over the head for all the patriarchal attitudes of many hard nuts in the Ummah. He apologized fully, sincerely. What more is required? Make him grovel, crawl on the ground, what do you want? He even said that he will go on sabbatical. That means he will take some long leave, take a break from the work that he's doing and all of that. But the arrows keep coming. And you know what? People who know him, they love him. Maulana Khalid Dorat wrote a wonderful piece about Maulana Samson, saying how much difference he has made to his community, especially those who went astray, drug addicts and so on. I don't think he's got a malicious bone, Maulana Samson. I don't think Maulana Samson has got a malicious bone in his body, nor does he view women in a negative light. I don't think so. Seriously. But that won't stop people getting onto their high horse and smashing him to pieces. Poor fellow must be shocked and no doubt depressed at the huge, unexpected reaction. A good man, broken down. And just a passing thought. I can't remember a letter signed by prominent personalities addressing the person who insults women in the vilest and the most unbridled manner, calling them prostitutes for organizing some function to empower women or something like that, or against those women who are working hard to promote Muslim personal law. Prostitutes, he calls them, openly and repeatedly. But no. Let's make an example of this evil Maulana Dawood Samson. They say that he was let off lightly by his peers. Eh? Good heavens. So much of energy expended on a man who unwittingly erred and then deeply apologized. In fact, his wife posted a wonderful review about her husband, saying things about him that I'm sure many men who are listening to this cannot even match at all, about what a good husband he is. You know, frankly, I feel very sad. We are quite a gifted lot, eh? And I'm not saying that as a compliment. We are gifted, man. Big things are happening to Muslims, but we rather go for the ant with a sledgehammer. Disproportionate force. Nothing more, nothing less. He put a toe wrong, perhaps. Now you want to chop his whole leg off. Overkill, that's what I call it. Overkill. And I'm starting to get very cross now. I'm starting to get cross. So let me leave it there. If you agree with what I've said, good, good. And if you disagree, good. No problem. And so it was a week ago that he announced that he was going to get married to a second wife on Friday, which was yesterday. I tried to find out whether the nikah went through. It seemed like that happy occasion was spoiled by all these barbs that were thrown at him. But anyway, to Samson, I hope that you have a happy life with your Delilah and your first wife forever and ever, inshallah. Ameen. Okay, now let's get to another issue. A slogan that originated in the United States some time ago and gained huge traction when a cop put his knee on the neck of a black man and the man died, saying, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." So the slogan that came about then was Black Lives Matter. It's been around for a long time, but it gained more traction after the man was killed in that manner. Black Lives Matter. It is now repeated worldwide. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Here in South Africa, this mantra has also taken root. People are urged to take the knee, meaning a sign of solidarity. Even politicians are chanting this slogan, Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. That is wonderful. But when I hear politicians saying Black Lives Matter, I say to myself, really? Are you serious? Don't make me laugh, please, eh? You are busy stealing the money meant to save black lives. Black lives don't matter to you, you dirty, stinking liars. But let me tell you about a silver lining to this very depressing situation. In many countries around the world, people have been aware of corruption for many years, many, many years. But they went about their lives knowing what's going on, but not really moved enough to do anything about it. But the coronavirus has changed all of that. People have lost their jobs. Businesses have closed down permanently. There's a huge, huge rise in poverty. Huge rise. And desperately poor people are looking at the people at the top who are living the high life. And even worse, are stealing money on an unimaginable scale. I call it an industrial scale. They're seeing millions down. And stealing money meant to save their lives, the poor people. So people are fed up. Fed up. As I said previously, caller after caller, without exception, on our radio talk shows have expressed anger at ANC politicians. In other countries, too, people are struggling to put food on the table and are turning against their leaders who appear to be concerned only about their own well-being, filling their pockets. A poll carried out last week indicates that 7 in 10 Americans are embarrassed by Trump's COVID response. Many of his supporters are going to vote for his opponent, Joe Biden, in the November elections. Fat cat president Jair Bolsonaro of Bolivia is facing daily demonstrations. Massive demos are taking place against Alexander Lukashenko, president of Belarus. He's been in power for 26 years. His days are numbered. Mark my words. And it's happening in Israel also. For weeks now, thousands are demonstrating outside the house of Benjamin Netanyahu, facing fraud and corruption charges, but mainly for mismanaging the outbreak of the coronavirus. That, for me, is quite incredible. And you know what? It made me wonder what the situation would be if it was thousands of Palestinians demonstrating outside Netanyahu's house. How many people would have been shot, injured, and killed? And it wouldn't, that demonstration wouldn't last for even one full day. And hundreds would have ended up in jail. But what I saw on TV was people being pulled away or pushed back or and things like that. So that's nice, eh? Nice. Pushed back. Not shot. So that's it. The poorer people, the poorer that people get, the more they look at the fat cats getting fatter. And so they are rising up. The side effect of the coronavirus is a revolution. But let's get back to the local scene. I have a brilliant plan. Brilliant plan. Listen to this. Just as you see people standing in long lines at the post office, I think, to collect their 350 Rand government COVID grant, we should get all the chore politicians lined up outside Parliament and hand them the billions that are coming in from the IMF. Why waste time with the whole process of tenders when the money is going to go into their pockets anyway? Of course, you know I'm kidding. But every day we hear stories about the Chorwan virus pandemic. Chorwan virus pandemic. Every day. Here's a fictitious story. Johnson, Dlamini and Patel submitted their tenders to build a security fence around a government building. The director of the tender process called Patel in and said, "Mr. Patel, why is your tender at such a high cost?" Dlamini's quotation is 50,000 rands. Johnson is 75,000 rands. But yours is 150,000 rands. How do you explain that? And Patel replied, "Hell, boss, hey, very simple. 50,000 rands for me, 50,000 rands for you, and 50,000 rands to Dlamini to do the job." Right? Well, you can laugh at that, but you know what? Real life is sometimes stranger than fiction. Here is an example that was heard at the Zondo Commission. Listen very carefully. Listen to the names. Edwin Sodi was the CEO of Blackhead Consulting Company. Ignatius Mpambani was the director of Diamond Hill Trading. You got that? Mpambani and Sodi. Sodi first met Mpambani in 2010. In February 2014, Mpambani approached Sodi with an offer to partner in a project to remove asbestos in the Free State. They just have to check which of those homes that were built by the government had asbestos in them. So they formed a partnership. A proposal was done and handed to the Department of Settlements. Later that year, 2014, they got paid out 255 million rands just to audit and assess the work that has still to be done. They were not going to do the work. They were just going to assess what's got to be done. So they were going to check all those homes to look for asbestos. Mpambani later told Sodi that Sidney Redebe of a company called Master Trade could do the job for 44 million. If you think it stops there, the answer is that later Mpambani went to another company called ORI or ORI Group to do the audit and assessment for how much? 21.3 million rands. Did you get that, my dear people? The government paid out already 255 million rands for the job that was passed down the line and could be done for 21 million rands. Are you shocked? Well, that's just one wonderful example of how taxpayers' money is going down the drain fast. Very fast. And can you tell me why your electricity suddenly goes off? Why do we have load shedding? Here is one reason. Manoj Singh. Who is Manoj Singh? He was the chief financial officer of Eskom and Transnet. Eskom and Transnet. Chief financial officer. Finance means money. Money means maja. And 2 days ago, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants stripped him of his chartered account status because, in their words, he was grossly negligent and dishonest. Well, the technical term for that, dear listeners, is chorwan. When I read the article about him, I was left breathless. The scale of the looting was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Via him, massive amounts were channeled to Gupta Link companies. Here's some bits of that testimony. Now listen to this name. Regiments Capital was a Gupta Linked company. It got in touch with a Chinese company to provide trains for South Africa. Manoj Bhai was, as I said, chief financial officer for Transnet, our train service. And he okayed the deal for 1,064 trains, 1,064 locomotives. The cost to us, you, the taxpayer, the cost to the government was 38.6 billion, $38.6 billion. Manoj Bhai said later, no. You know, with the exchange rate, instability and so on, and other factors, well, one might call it a cock and bull story, as Maulana Samsud would describe it. The cost would be now 54.5 billion rands for those locomotives. Are you with me? Yeah, are you following me? Just for putting the deal together as consultants, Regiments Capital Company, linked to the Guptas, got a kickback, a commission of how much? 3.7 billion rands. Wonderful, right? Wonderful. The deal was a disaster. Just a few trains were delivered and some were unfit to be used on our rail tracks because I heard that they were too tall, too high to connect with the overhead electricity supply. It's all quite a long story. Transnet is battling to cancel the deal, but the Guptas got their bucks. So what did he do at Eskom, Manoj Bhai? What did he do at Eskom? Well, listen again very carefully. Optimum Coal Mine was supplying coal to Eskom. In 2016, a Gupta-linked company called Tegeta Exploration wanted to buy Optimum Coal Mine. But they didn't have the bucks to do that. So, our Manoj Bhai, on Manoj Bhai's instructions, Eskom gave Tegeta 659 million rands. The Guptas were smiling. And there's more to that horror story. So both Transnet and Eskom are financially battling. Next time your lights go off, you can acknowledge Manoj Singh with some nice choice words that sailors use. And you can take your whole day to unpack the Chorwan virus, also known as state capture. Whole day. I can take a whole day to discuss it. Actually, the Gupta story is state capture part one. State Capture Part 2 is the billion stolen that's meant to purchase personal protective equipment, PPE. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. That should change. That slogan should change for these children. It should be Maseratis matter, Maseratis, Porsches matter, Lamborghinis matter, Lamborghinis matter. You know, I believe that lots of them are seen in the streets of Johannesburg these days. Lots of them, all over. Durban, we are broke, John is here. We don't get the tenders. Cross over to America, and the Democratic Party was having its big convention. Big convention. No balloons and no big crowds, no cheering crowds, no nothing. It was all virtual. Prominent people appeared on TV from their homes or offices supporting Joe Biden, seen on TV, of course, supporting Joe Biden as the candidate against Trump in the November elections. One by one, they came on saying why people should vote for Biden. There was Hillary Clinton and her husband, Bill Lewinsky, blowing off his mouth for a change. Did you get that one? Okay, never mind. Let it pass. But I spilt my tea when I saw one first-class laddu. I nearly brought up my naan katai when I saw Colin Powell. Colin Powell. You remember that name? Firstly, he was a Republican Party supporter, and now he was voting for the Democratic Party, voting for Joe Biden. But really, what really irritated me, and let me see if I can get my computer to work again, which it is not. So, what really irritated me is what he said. And this is it. The values I learned growing up in the South Bronx and serving in uniform were the same values that Joe Biden's parents instilled in him in Scranton, Pennsylvania. You got that? The values I learned growing up in the Southern Bronx and serving in uniform were the same values that Joe Biden's parents instilled in him in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Colin Powell speaking about values. The values he learned was to be a dirty, stinking, rotten liar who sent American troops to Iraq, young people, where many died. And thousands of Iraqis also died. And the country was totally destroyed. And is still suffering from the lies of Colin Powell, who said at the United Nations that they have to bomb Iraq because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And he has the colossal cheek to speak about values. He should be deeply ashamed of himself. And maybe he should be charged as a war criminal together with his boss at that time, George Bush. Okay, so we have the Democratic Party and Joe Biden as the possible next president of the United States next year. I was always rooting for Bernie Sanders to be the head of the Democratic Party, to be the next president. He's a relatively good guy, he's honest and straightforward. But he didn't have enough support, so in the end he told his supporters to vote for Biden. Then we have four ladies known as the Squad. Remember this. Two of them are Muslims, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Recently elections took place in their districts and huge, huge amounts of money were poured in to support their opponents. Much of it came from pro-Israel groups. These two women are strongly supportive of the Palestinians. Well, it didn't work. Both were re-elected and they are back in the Democratic Party with two others who hold the same views. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is known by the nickname of AOC, and the other one is Ayanna Pressley. All four are relatively young and feisty. feisty. They are outspoken and take no nonsense. So we have the squad, these four women, and also Bernie Sanders, all of them who support Palestinian rights. And then we have Joe Biden, who is a good friend of Israel. Expect some behind-the-scenes fireworks. Let's look at the other guy, President Pagla. Of course, you know who I'm speaking about. Poor fellow is getting desperate. Desperate. All indications are he's going to lose. He said something quite truthful for a change a few days ago. Do you remember in December 2017, he moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, thereby officially recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And he explained at that time that he did it for the purposes of peace. Well, that was a big lie. That was a big lie. And so he actually spoke the truth yesterday. He did it to get the votes of a large group of Christians in America known as the Evangelicals, who, and I'm reading from the British Independent newspaper, they believe that Trump has been chosen by God to advance the kingdom of God on earth. Israel is a key issue for many of these voters. I spoke about the evangelicals many times before, and perhaps I'll do it again. They are a real threat to peace in the Middle East in respect of what they believe. And I have no doubt that Trump asked the leader of the UAE last week, remember? He asked the leader of the UAE to normalize relations with Israel. This really put the proverbial cat among the pigeons. All kinds of statements are coming out from these dictators in the Middle East. Listen to this reports. Right, listen to these reports. Okay, but before that I was telling you about Trump saying that he did it for the event. He actually did, these are his words, and we moved the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. That's for the evangelicals, Mr. Trump told supporters at a rally on Monday. The president added to huge applause from the crowd. You know, it's amazing. The evangelicals are more excited about that than Jewish people. That's really right. It's incredible. So those were his words. So cat amongst the pigeons. Let's see what happened. UAE normalized relations, and is actually opening an embassy in Tel Aviv, I just heard today. Right, so Saudi Arabia said on Wednesday it will not follow the United Arab Emirates in establishing diplomatic ties with Israel until the Jewish state has signed an internationally recognized peace accord with the Palestinians. Next report. U.S. President Donald Trump said yesterday he expects Saudi Arabia to join the UAE to normalize ties with Israel and forge a broad new relationship. When asked at the White House news conference if he expected Saudi Arabia to join the deal, Trump replied, I do. Next report. Saudi Arabia hailed on Wednesday the controversial UAE-Israeli normalization deal, describing it as a potential contribution to peace in the region. Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud expressed, these are his words, any effort that promotes peace in the region and that result in holding back the threat of annexation could be viewed as positive. And here's another report. The leader of the secular Ummah Party in Iraq and former member of the House of Representatives, Mittal Al-Lusi, has said the Iraqi government should follow the UAE in normalizing its relations with Israel. According to the Shafaq news agency, Al-Alusi said, Iraq needs to get out of the camp of wars, extremism and delusions, and it needs to build stable relations with all countries of the world. For this, Iraq needs a peace agreement with Israel similar to the Emirates. Well, dear listeners, what more can I say? With crowns like these leading the Muslim world, what hope is there? Meanwhile, Gaza has been bombed 10 nights in a row. You know, I saw a chilling documentary last night on Al Jazeera, where a young Palestinian journalist is shown videoing the heavy bombardment of Gaza. At one point, a paramedic was with him, with this cameraman, and they are terrified as the bombs are falling nearer and nearer. And they were crouching down with fear, and then a bomb falls right there where they are. And the cameraman is killed, and his camera is still running, and you see only his hand and a drop of blood falling on that. It was really heart-wrenching to watch. Go to Al Jazeera website and search the word Palestine 15. I think that's what the name of the documentary, Palestine 15. Watch it and see the horror. Watch it and see the horror that Israel mercilessly rains down on Gaza. What else have I got for you? Well, in yesterday's paper, I came across quite a startling story. We've got a few minutes left, two or three minutes left, so I've got quite a startling story here. That page 3 of the Daily News, 4 in 10 South Africans believe the coronavirus threat is exaggerated, according to research released by the University of Johannesburg and the Human Sciences Research Council this week. That the threat is exaggerated, which means they're not taking it seriously. Can you believe it? I had a Tyler at my house the other day, and of course he had his mask on, I had my mask on, I was still a bit nervous, and I said, "Aren't you afraid of the virus?" And he told me, no, in the squatter camps or the informal settlements, the people are putting boiling water and they're putting some Dettol into it and covering it and getting that steam into their lungs, so they believe that's what will save them. Wow. What more can I say? Right, so before we get to some light at the end of the tunnel, from the light of at the end of the tunnel graveyard, going back many years, I hope you forgot this one. Let me just say that part 2 of the Big Picture is on Radio Al Ansar after the 12 o'clock news. You can get it outside of Durban by Googling Al Ansar Audio Streaming. Al Ansar Audio Streaming, that's after 12 o'clock. Right, so what have I got for you now? A man walks into a Pakistani barber shop in Sparks Road here in Durban, holding the hand of a small boy. The man sat in the chair and got the full treatment. Haircut, shampoo and then haircut, and eyebrows were trimmed and moustache trimmed and head massage. He got the whole works. When he finished, he lifted the boy onto the chair and said, "Okay, now, beta, now you have your haircut. I'll just go over to the vet shop nearby and I'll be back in a few minutes." When the boy's haircut was finished, the man had not returned. After 20 minutes, the barber said, "Hey boy, looks like your daddy forgot all about you." And the boy replied, "Hey uncle, that is not my daddy. I was walking in Sparks Road and this man took my hand and said, 'Come with me, son. We are going to get a free haircut.'" This is David Auji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.